Welcome to Press TV's book review show, Epilogue. Today we'll be looking at a book by Amna Dawood Badran, Zionist Israel and Apartheid South Africa. But before that discussion, here's a short introduction to the topic at hand.
Apartheid means separateness in the South African language. This segregation became a policy that was enforced by South Africa's National Party government between 1948 and early 1994. Under the apartheid, different races were kept apart in different schools, in different towns, in different jobs, with different doctors. In effect, there were two sets of laws, with one for each set of citizen. In 2002, the acts of the apartheid became criminal under the Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court. Between World War I and 1994, the apartheid and Zionist leaders had a good relationship. Their relations blossomed in 1948, with South Africa being amongst the first governments to recognise the new State of Israel. In the 1960s, communication between the two countries' secret services became regular. This led to South Africa and Israel conducting joint military training and exchange programmes. By the end of the 70s, the two countries had begun collaborating with nuclear technology. Some experts say Israel aided the development of South Africa's nuclear program by assisting them with building their first nuclear bomb. In 2004, the Zionist government built a separation wall that critics internationally have called an apartheid structure because it surrounds, isolates, and economically strangles the Palestinian territories. Analysts say there are many similarities between the fallen apartheid regime in South Africa and Zionist Israel. Both states are the byproduct of outside implantation imposed on the indigenous population. But while South Africa's apartheid was explicitly based on the assumption of racial superiority, Israel is criticized for discriminating on religious grounds, although their government fully denies these allegations. Israel and the apartheid are comparable on many fronts, from the assault on the Palestinian and non-white South Africans' political rights to enforcing identification cards that have been arguably discriminatory, to inadequacies in their representations and so forth. In today's epilogue, we will further delve into the similarities of Zionist Israel and South Africa's apartheid state, and discuss if Israel's policies are as unsustainable as South Africa's turned out to be.
Today I'm joined by Victor Catan. Victor's a teaching fellow at the Centre for International Studies and Diplomacy at the School of Oriental and African Studies. He's just published a book, From Coexistence to Conquest, which explores international law and the origins of the Arab-Israeli conflict. Also here today is Keith Fraser. Keith is a spokesman for the Zionist Federation of Great Britain and Ireland. Nice to have you both with us. I think I should come straight to you, Keith, and say, do you feel that was a fair and balanced introduction there in the video we just saw?
It's utter propaganda. To compare South Africa with Israel is utter propaganda. Israel is a democracy. In its Declaration of Independence, it's stated equality for social groups, religious groups. It respects all religions, Christians, Muslims, they're all allowed to pray. The holy sites are protected. It's just utter propaganda. We always looking at the Israel bashers, such as yourself, Ken, who constantly like to bash Israel and look at Israel with a microscope. Why are we not looking at the countries with the true racist apartheid policies? Jordan, neighbouring Jordan, in which the actual state law states no Jews are allowed. If that's not apartheid, if that's not racist, what is? Saudi Arabia, do they allow Christians to pray during the first Gulf War, when the American army was protecting Saudi Arabia from a potential Iraq invasion? The Christian soldiers were not allowed to conduct Christian services because it was disrespectful to Islam. And yet we always like, I don't. Why do you? What is your agenda? You tell me your agenda and Press TV's agenda to constantly focus on Israel, Israel, Israel. Israel has democratic elections. 20% of the Knesset are Arabs. They have representatives in the High Court. There was a temporary Arab-Israeli president of Israel. You tell me, what country in the Middle East allows its minority groups, like gays, like Jews, the same type of equalities that Israel does to its minorities. It's a complete and utter propaganda mission by the book and by Israel bashers such as yourself, who concentrate solely on Israel and not on the surrounding states, who deserve a lot more criticism.
Well, I'm particularly critical of all those medieval military dictatorships, which largely tend to have been propped up by Western governments in order to defend Western oil interests in the area. But reality is that it's Israel, which is part of the Western economy, very tied in with the European Union, as well as preferential agreements, and therefore we actually expect, part of our economic sphere, in a way that the Arab nations aren't, that we'll be more critical. And that's simple reality. We can have more effect. I used to be intensely critical of the South African government, and when eventually the United States of America started imposing real sanctions, the apartheid system collapsed. I would love to immediately invade Burma and overthrow that hideous junta. But it's a question of where the West can be effective. And as we've seen, all the vast power of the West hasn't been able to impose its will in Afghanistan or Iraq. So the days when the West could organise the world as it wanted are gone. And you come down to these debates and intense debates that we have about these subjects. But why is Israel so sensitive about the allegations that there are parallels here with South Africa? Because in reality, you do have a sort of semi-theocratic state, and I'm opposed to all of them. I mean, opposed to the Church of England being the official religion here. And you also have this sort of situation where, I mean, Israel after the war in 1967 could have had a choice of saying, we've now united the ancient land of Palestine, we will give everyone the vote, we will have a genuine two-state solution amalgamated into one, let Arab and Jew live side by side with equal rights. But I mean, over 40 years on, we've still got effectively Gaza as a prison, and this wall that now is an economic block from prevents the creation of a genuine...
I'll answer that, yeah. First of all, the wall is not a separation wall, it's a security wall. Over 1,000 people were killed by suicide bombs during the Second Intifada. The security wall, as you call it, only makes up 4% of the actual barrier. Most of it is actually not a wall. It has reduced suicide bombings by 98%. So the actual reason that Israel put it up was to secure its citizens. And to call it an apartheid wall, a separation wall, is propaganda. It's propaganda. To say that Gaza is a prison, let's be honest about this. The only country on its border, remember, there's two countries on Gaza's border, Israel and Egypt. Egypt, they're Arab brethren. Egypt is putting up a wall to divide itself between Gaza and itself, Egypt, in order to stop weapons smuggling. Israel, of the two countries, which is not even recognised by the controllers of Gaza, which is Hamas, who don't recognise, in fact they go further than not recognising, they actually state in their mandate the destruction of Israel and the destruction of Jews worldwide. So let me ask you this question, why you call it a prison when Egypt on its border should be allowing supplies and food to go through there? Why blame Israel? This is propaganda, and that in itself is racist.
Victor.
I have a word. Well, the International Court of Justice, which is a principal judicial organ of the United Nations, expressly rejected the view that the apartheid wall, the barrier, the fence, whatever you want to call it, was solely built for security reasons. It annexed a large settlement blocks around Jerusalem into Israel, and it also takes over a lot of water resources, and it's not just the wall itself, it's the matrix of control, separate road system, permits placed on Palestinians who can't move from one village to another, or from Gaza to the West Bank, or study in the West Bank and live in Gaza. They also have permit systems that affects them traveling to Israel, traveling outside of the occupied territories. There are also discriminatory legislation affecting marriage rights between Palestinian spouses in Israel and in the occupied territories. And then there's the special legal regime for the settlements and the settlers. Israel uses military orders to channel Israeli legislation into the West Bank, which leads to two different regimes, legal regimes applying for Palestinian citizens and for Israeli citizens living in the occupied territories. So I think that there are parallels with apartheid South Africa, especially if you look at the occupied territories rather than Israel itself.
If I may say, Victor, that's another thing that we always seem to do wrong, another propaganda tool to call the West Bank an occupied territory. It's a disputed territory. When Israel won the war when Israel was threatened with annihilation by several Arab states, whose actual role was and aim was the extermination of the Jewish state. That's what you call ethnic cleansing, by the way, Ken. The Arabs went into Israel in a number of wars with the sole objective to kill Jews and to rid the land of Jews. That's what you call ethnic cleansing. When you talk about the West Bank, the West Bank is the West Bank of Jordan. It was annexed to Jordan, and the Israelis took it from Jordan in a defensive war. They took Gaza from Egypt in a defensive war. They are now at peace with Jordan. They are now at peace with Egypt. So why call it occupied?
Why don't you actually look at the situation in 1948 when you had massive ethnic cleansing? I mean, Benny Morris, this historian, I know he's recanted this now because he realises he let out the bag, made it absolutely clear that the proto-Israeli state was determined to drive hundreds of thousands of Arabs off their land in order to create a Jewish majority in the areas they still
have. It's simply untrue.
Benny Morris hasn't recanted. He admits that there were hundreds of thousands of Palestinians expelled in 1948. He says it was a byproduct of the war, that there wasn't a plan. That's the difference between Morris and Ilan Pappe. But he doesn't dispute.
And no mention by either of you two guys, for example, the fact there were 1.5 million Arabs in Israel proper today. If that's ethnic cleansing, Ken, if that is ethnic cleansing, then what is what is it? 1.5 million Arabs today. What did they come out of abracadabra?
In 1948, 85% of the Palestinian population were ethnically cleansed.
They were not ethnically cleansed.
The 15% that remained are the 1.5 million that exist today.
No,
that was
absolutely not true.
Benny Morris described, the man who went on to become Prime Minister.
Benny Morris, a revisionist historian.
Yes, went on to describe how Yitzhak Rabin, in control of armed forces, forced all the population of Lod out of, the Arab population out. Didn't need to kill them, unlike some of the more extreme groups that eventually went on to form the basis of the Likud party. But it was a clear policy of actually ensuring Arabs were moved out. And that is why, because still 60 years later, that ethnic cleansing has never been resolved. There still are the refugees everywhere.
Excuse me interrupting, Ken. Let's get it right. The Mandate of Palestine, when the Jews accepted the petition, in the areas that were being petitioned, there was a Jewish majority. Okay? Now, it was the Arabs who rejected it. Not the Jews, the Arabs. If the Arabs would have accepted it, there would have been a two-state solution today. Notwithstanding the fact that Palestine, and the book actually that we're about to review, it's called Mandatory Palestine, the British Mandate covered present-day Israel, including the Gaza Strip, the West Bank, and Jordan, and parts of southern Syria.
No, Jordan that, cut off.
Jordan, no, I beg your pardon, when the Balfour Declaration was in 1917, in the Balfour Declaration, Palestine included Jordan, it included modern-day Israel and southern Syria.
Okay? So
80% of Palestine was given up to create effectively a Palestinian state in which the majority
but
of Palestinians...
Right, no, no. What right did
of which
British
Jews are not allowed. That is ethnic cleansing.
But what right did, British politicians have to give away Arab lands to Jewish settlers?
It wasn't Arab lands.
But it's not just that, Ken.
The
Balfour Declaration had safeguard clauses protecting the civil and religious rights of the Palestinian community. You talked about 1948 and the UN partition plan of 1947. But the war after the plan, after the partition plan was recommended by the UN General Assembly, was never implemented. And when the UN decided to reverse its policy for a UN trusteeship agreement that would have kept Palestine's territorial integrity intact, Ben-Gurion then implemented Plan Dalit in April 1948, 2 months before Israel declared independence. So on the 15th of May, already half of the Arab population of Palestine had either fled or been expelled from there.
What did the Arab army say? They said, move out of the way and we'll...
That is propaganda.
What about the fact, you don't even mention the fact that the mayor of Haifa pleaded with the Arab population, please do not leave. And of course, as you know, Haifa is a perfect example of how Jews and Arabs live together in peace and harmony. In fact, you may know a few years ago, one of the restaurants that was unfortunately bombed by suicide bombers, was actually owned by a Jew and an Arab.
Yeah, but let's not...
Where does ethnic cleansing come from?
Well, ethnic cleansing, we're in a position where the world intervened to stop ethnic cleansing in Yugoslavia, and the perpetrators of that ended up in prison. And the reality is the perpetrators of the ethnic cleansing in the Middle East have got away with it, and the world has come to accept that.
Such as the Arab countries, who ethnically cleansed the Arab states of almost a million Jews.
This is part of the tragedy that once you start down this road...
Why don't you mention that? The Jewish Agency assisted that, Operation Magic Carpet, funneling millions of pounds to help Yemeni Jews come to Israel. Same situation.
Exactly. So why were the Arab states, of which there are 20 or so,
not helping? Because it's their homeland,
it's where you live. And our homeland, in fact, the Jews lost property, they lost businesses, they lost their rights when they were driven out of Arab states. Why don't you mention the ethnically cleansing? Why don't you mention ethnic cleansing in the Arab countries? Or should we just comfortably omit that from our language, shall we?
Wherever there's been ethnic cleansing, it's wrong.
Why don't you ever mention it? I never hear you mention it, Ken.
Because I don't...
Always ethnic cleansing Israel.
No,
ethnic
because
cleansing Israel.
It is the West that props up Israel. It is the West that gives arms to it.
Up Egypt
and we have a right to expect. We have a right to expect, therefore, that it actually deals with these long-standing problems that bring death to the streets of London when we get suicide bombers
bring
here.
Death because to the streets of London?
Because of the long-term, I mean, double standard of the West. Victor, you're not getting as much time as you should in this.
No, I was going to return to 1948.
Just go back to 1948.
I mean, we've also got to remember that the Zionist movement prior to the 1948 war were also aiming to get rid of the British mandatory authorities.
As
the Ergun and the Haganah and the Stern Gang also committed terrible acts of atrocities at King David Hotel, etc., against the Brits, assassinated Lord Moyne. But the point is that at the end of the day, I mean, we've got to come to a situation where the past has happened and we have to come to some kind of resolution. To live together.
So this really brings us to the point, reading this book, I think it makes a powerful case that there are strong similarities with apartheid South Africa. We're not going to agree on that. But now we face the situation, broadly the world signed up to this idea of two-state solution. For me as an Englishman, looking at the history of my country in Ireland, this is the tragedy. Britain imposed a two-state solution on Ireland in 1921. It didn't resolve anything. The conflict continued until Tony Blair eventually found some sort of broad way forward out of this. My worry is this, why won't Israel take up the reality that both the Palestinians that were living there before they were expelled and Jews have a right to live side by side with that wall coming down, with the creation of at least one economic unit, if not one state? The days when we argued for a secular state there, in which Arab and Jew could live together, have gone.
Let me explain. Israel is already a multinational secular state in which Arabs, of which a poll, I think it was 2 years ago in Haaretz, which is probably would be a newspaper you would read if you live in Israel, Ken, because it's very left-wing, actually stated that 77% of Israeli Arabs said that if they had the chance to go somewhere else, they wouldn't, because they appreciate, although there may be problems as a minority, as there are problems in minorities here in America and other Western countries, they would not want to go anywhere. Okay, Israel is the only democracy in the Middle East. You don't mention, all you want to mention is the problems it has with society. I don't mention the why don't we talk about the ethnic cleansing of Israel, of Jews out of Arab countries, shall we, Ken?
I think
that why don't we talk about that?
I would condemn that.
What is your agenda?
The reality is that was an inevitable consequence of the ethnic cleansing that Israelis did to their Arab citizens. There's bound to be a backlash, Victor.
This idea of a democracy, I mean, it's on a superficial level, you're right, and I agree with most of what you said, but also there are laws in Israel that specifically state that you can only have a political party if it accepts Israel as a Jewish and democratic state. So it already brings in the idea of a Jewish state in there. So it's not. And also, of course, the historical legacy that there were Palestinians living on the land first, and that, yes, it's a democracy now, but if the Palestinians had still been living there and were the majority.
Where do you say that Palestinians were living on the land first? The Jews have been there since day dot for thousands of years. The Jews had a country. They had in greater... United Israel under King David, under King Solomon. And you're saying the indigenous population of the Palestinians, it's...
And let me condemn.
It's a joke.
Let me condemn the ethnic cleansing of Jews from that land by the ancient empire.
First, I've heard you say it.
Great. Wrong.
Correct.
2,000 years ago. But you can't seriously. You're not about to tell me this was a people without a land for a land without people.
This is a
Palestinians is a, were there. They were driven out.
They were not driven out.
Yes, they were.
If they were driven out, why are there 1.5 million Arabs in Israel? Why are there 1.5 million Arabs in Israel?
Because they're very happy to live in Israel.
They're very happy to live in Israel. 1.5 million Arabs in Israel.
But if you
live under democracy, they have greater liberties than the rest of the Arabs in the Middle East.
Why not allow the others, the descendants of the others who were driven out, to be able to come back and live in the land where they their ancestors come from?
So why? How many other expulsions or situations where populations have had to leave? Jews are the Jews allowed back into the Arab countries? You made that case. Very good, Ken. That's the first time I've heard you say it. Maybe we can extend that and go deeper and maybe drag some sort of fairness out of you.
It's not the problem here that when Zionism was conceived of back in 1880s, the world was one that accepted racial division. British people assumed they were racially superior to blacks, that they were racially superior to the Chinese. The Germans talked about anyone of German blood, even if it had been 1,000 years since they left, able to come back. The world, broadly accepted this racism at all levels. And that was the origin of Zionism, the idea, every other group's racially selective, we will do it. We see that today in this ridiculous situation that whereas Christianity and Islam massively goes out there to convert people to its faith, it's very difficult to convert into Judaism. And we've got this ridiculous situation where our Supreme Court is deciding on the school admissions policies for Jewish schools. And so I think there is this real problem. There's a sort of racial exclusiveness has its origins in that dreadful time, 1880s, when all nations suffered.
Why don't we talk about racial exclusivity in places like Saudi Arabia, Ken? Why don't we talk about racial exclusivity in Iran?
What is your fear of having a secular state in which the refugees can return and... I mean, it was inconceivable.
What does refugee mean?
It's anyone whose ancestors were driven out in 1948 or subsequently.
That's what you call a refugee.
That's
well, there's all sorts of cloudiness with regard to the term refugee. Supposedly, there's 5 million refugees living outside of Israel.
So
what you're saying is five million refugees, because as you know about the Geneva initiative, where they want to recognise Israel if Israel cedes back to the 67 lines, but all the refugees come into Israel. Plus, we've got an exclusively Palestinian Arab West Bank and Gaza.
Is that what you call
one Jewish state in the world, 50-odd Muslim states. Why cannot there be a Jewish state?
You want racially exclusive states.
So do the Palestinians.
The Likud party platform says that they expressly, it's on the platform, rejects the idea of a Palestinian state.
Absolutely. Bibi Netanyahu has said he will make any painful concessions in order to see the two-state solution come to fruition. He has specifically recently said that we are not going to build any more settlements, and the Palestinians still do not want peace with Israel. The Palestinians have had many opportunities of a two-state solution. Bear in mind, we've already got Jordan, which is 80% of Palestine, of which no Jews are allowed to go there. How about that for racism, Ken? Jews allowed in there.
Why can't Palestinians live in Palestine?
Why can't I go and live in America?
Well, you probably can.
I think you'll find that they're very, very difficult for me to get citizenship to America. So each country has its own rights as to who it does and does not let into their country to live.
When Jews left Russia, finally after the old communists let them go, most of the Russian Jews wanted to go to America. They were forced to actually go to Israel because that was part of the deal done to defend Zionist interests, that we'll create as many Jews in one area as possible.
Ken,
why didn't Israel allow the Russian Jews who wished to emigrate from Russia and wanted to go to America, why did they insist they have to go to Israel?
This is not a fact. This is absolute propaganda. The fact of the matter is, Ken, I'm sitting here on this show in an Iranian TV station with a microscope all on Israel, the only democracy in the Middle East, with democracy for Muslims, Christians and whoever. And yet you, nor yourself, Victor, want to talk about the Arab countries. None of the Israel bashers like yourself, Ken, ever want to talk about the Arab countries who have I mean, let's be honest, when you were Mayor of London, you welcomed with open arms one of the most racist, disgusting human beings, Yousef Karadari, who's openly explicitly the killing of gays, the killing of pregnant Israeli women, and yet you have the cheek to go and criticise Israel on a regular basis for being discriminatory.
I embrace Karadari because I heard him in my presence argue that there shouldn't be punitive
measures
against homosexuals. Well, I believe what a man tells me to my face rather than what I read on Mossad-backed websites.
On Mossad's website, I see. So you're saying the fact that 23 Muslim states in the UN actually signed a declaration against this man for his actions.
Well,
but of course a Mossad is a lie, that is propaganda, of which you are always part of.
He represents the progressive strand of Islam, which is why many of the existing Arab states hate him. Anyhow, I suspect we're not going to resolve
this
in the next 10 seconds.
The man is well known for discrimination. But you welcomed him.
I mean, I welcomed him because I heard him say what he said with his own mouth in my presence, that he is not anti-homosexual, he does not support the persecution of Jews or Christians,
so would you believe
but he defends the right of Palestinians to fight for their homeland. But, unfortunately, we have to bring this discussion to a close. I suspect it will continue for a very long time to come. I think this book is a powerful case. I hope it might be turned into a popular shortened version, because it is basically a PhD thesis. I'd like to thank both my guests, Victor and Keith, for coming and having a valuable discussion, even though we haven't come to a unanimity in our point of view. If you've got an opinion on what's been said here today, or you've a particular book you'd like to draw to attention, then please email us at epilogue@presstv.co.uk. And until next time, thank you for watching.